Hello and welcome to Talkin' Shit, where we are talking all kinds of shit. Shit's Creek, that is. I'm here with my co-host, whose turn it is to take a selfish. Stuart, how are you?
I'm good. I'm gonna take a selfish and ask a technical question here. Mm-hmm. Are we booming this today? What's the ring light situation going on? Do we need an inky? What's an inky?
Have a ring light on most days because it's really dark in this room and I only have overhead lighting and no one needs to see that, you know. Give me a little bit of the blurification.
I saw something online that someone said that home that overhead lighting is homophobic, and I completely agree.
It's true. It really is a travesty. But we're not alone. We are joined for the first time with a guest. We have a guest today, blessed with a guest, not just any guest, but a Canadian guest, which hopefully gives some validity to anything we're about to say about Schitt's Creek, Stuart. Someone who knows all about the peachification process, Melissa. Melissa, how are you?
I'm good. I'm here in your corner. Whatever you need from me, I'm absolutely happy to be the first Canadian of, I'm sure, several on this pod who will point out all the things you're getting wrong about this wonderful show.
Mm-hmm. And the country, Canada, which we're probably getting a lot wrong because we're not Canadian. Spoiler alert. Before we get into talking about this episode, season one, episode six, Wine and Roses, don't forget to subscribe, Talkin' Shit, that's Talkin' without a G and S-C-H-I-T-T on all social media at Talkin' Shit. We're on YouTube. If you want to watch us, we're going to have some visual aids later on the podcast. So make sure you find us on YouTube. And of course, if you ever want to send in feedback, podcast@talkinshit.com is the way to do so if you want to email us. This episode, I feel like we've hit a certain point, Stuart, where Moira is now the Moira. Like, she is fully Moirified in this episode.
Yeah, going into the show, like, I'd seen the memes. I had, like, seen kind of odd clips of her talking here and there. And at first, the accent wasn't quite there. And I was like, is it, like, am I, like, manifesting this being a bit more kind of exaggerated than it is? Oh, no. I just had to be a little bit patient because it is all over the place. Yeah. Christopher Walken has nothing on this woman.
Crab apple. It's like the 17 syllable crab apple is incredible. Melissa, we haven't gotten your history with the show yet. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your history with Schitt's Creek, why you love the show, why you wanted to come on and chat about it.
Yeah. So I binged this show. I think it was a pandemic watch. For me, it was definitely within that kind of time frame. And so we watched it enough to catch up with like the finale and the final season of the show we were watching live. So, and it was one of those, like, I just remember watching so many interviews and so many conversations of them talking about how important it was for Eugene and Dan Levy to end this show on their own terms and to do so when they felt like they had no more stories to tell and not just keep dragging it out because it was so wildly successful. And so I just have so much respect for them as creators, also just because the show is so delightful and it came from their brains. But really, it's just, yeah. And it's funny, I didn't think of this show as being particularly Canadian. I think the first season is more Canadian than anything going forward, but it was funny on the rewatch just how many little things come up. First of all, the rounded sorries from everybody on this cast make me so happy. Obviously, all of the Canadian actors in this show. And then there'll be like occasional references or storylines that just I don't think will make sense to either of you, but it's fine. I'm happy to kind of fill in as much as I can.
Yeah, there's a specific storyline I'm thinking about in season two that's going to come up that we're certainly going to need some Canadian assistance with. But something, Melissa, the milk. There is a milk storyline in season two. Melissa, I know you have some words for us about the tickle trunk specifically, because apparently the way I described it, because I compared him to Mr. Rogers, is not good and we're in trouble. So, okay. Well, we're going to let you have your moment, Melissa. Tell us about the tickle trunk.
Okay. So first of all, you didn't just compare them. Your exact words were a lower budget Mr. Rogers. So I just need to explain to all of you that a generation of Canadian children were raised by Mr. Dressup. He is very much the equivalent for us in terms of, and we had Mr. Rogers, but he was absolutely like secondary. Like he was not as good as Mr. Dressup. And we always, I certainly growing up always watched Mr. Dressup. And then like if Mr. Rogers was on, sometimes I would watch it, but it was always a bit of a letdown in comparison. So I think that Mr. Dressup is the superior version, but it was just this like delightful old man with a trunk full of costumes and the scariest puppets you've ever seen. And he was just teaching us all sorts of life lessons. And it was so lovely. And it was on, you know, weekend mornings all the time. And yes, every Canadian that I know who has some collection of costumes, I have a lot of them because I often get dressed up for Ultimate Frisbee tournaments and things like that, refers to their container of costumes as a tickle trunk. So I have like a giant Rubbermaid full, and it is just like a part of the Canadian lexicon. But I just need everybody to know that Mr. Dressup is a wonderful, sweet, kind man who does not deserve all of the like jabs and teasing.
Listen, it was just a point of comparison, that's all. Because when I Googled him,
lower budget, Jessica.
Well, because he probably did have a lower budget. Like Mr. Rogers was like a household name. Like Mr. Rogers
in America, now, Mr. Dressup was a household name in Canada.
Of course. I'm just saying, like, if you were to like, I mean, Stuart, if I said to you Mr. Rogers, you probably know who I was talking about.
Only later in life. As a kid, I would have had no idea.
No, of course.
It wasn't until the internet would have made this a thing. Like, yeah. And the American kind of belovedness of Mr. Rogers. And like, we were all brought up by him. And it's like, great. We had Neil Buchanan and Smart like telling us like how to like make things out of paper mache and Blue Peter.
The thing that we need, though, I'm upset that Tickle Trunk isn't in our lexicon more. You know, like I wish Tickle Trunk was a thing that Americans could say that people would know what the hell you were talking about. Unfortunately, it's not. But we're happy to have you here, Melissa, to correct us on anything we get wrong about Canada, about Canadians, about any of that stuff, because, you know, we simply don't have that in our backstory, background, you know.
Gonna have another Tickle Trunks.
Children's television was like Big Comfy Couch, I think, is Canadian.
Love Polka Big Dot Comfy Door. Couch. Did you guys have Pappyland?
No, I don't know what that is.
Oh, so Pappyland, it was the same kind of older white guy dressed in like a very fun outfit. And like he would teach you how to draw. So that's, I remember loving him because he would make it very simple to be like, and this is, you do this very much like a children's Bob Ross, I would say. But the song was a bop. And anyone out there who remembers Pappyland, it was like, Pappy drew it. Like, it was just, it was like, it was a bop. It was really good. I
mean, we had Art Attack, which Stuart was talking about the other day. So yeah, we had,
Yeah, I mean, I'm drinking from a mug that is a tribute to it, which is surprisingly on theme for this week's episode as well. But yeah, we were brought up like Neil Buchanan. I was surprised to hear this week that Art Attack made its way over towards Canada as well, but seemingly not to America.
I have no
idea. What is with the gatekeeping here, Jess? Why are you not taking on our beloved childhood?
We're
like,
xenophobic.
Bringing
that's
up?
Why.
The ubiquity of American culture that's like shoved in the faces of the rest of us, but their inability to like consume culture from outside their own country is, you know, a bit, I'm just saying, Mr. Dressup, Art Attack, like there's a theme here that we are talking about. And American as people, I understand it's not your fault. I understand. It's okay. I'm not coming at any of you individually, but your country as a whole tends to be ignorant of other countries.
Oh, we're the worst. Yeah.
So
we're definitely the worst, but let me do my part and say, Schitt's Creek, an incredible Canadian show that I assume you're watching if you're listening to this podcast. And I'll shout out a British show, Taskmaster, one of my absolute favorite shows, like full stop. If you like to laugh, watch Taskmaster. It is so brilliant. Yeah. It is so funny. You get to hear a whole slew of different European accents on a show, which is, it's just so much fun. So check out Taskmaster. And now I feel like I've done my part as the American on the podcast to diversify the viewing of our, or the you know, the watching pleasures of our listeners. Let's talk about Wine and Roses. let me start us off with a quick little recap on what happened in this tremendous episode. Who's ready to taste some fruit wine? Maybe you'll be one of the lucky few to drink a glass with a ladybug in it. The Shits have a job opportunity. Johnny thinks Herb Ertlinger wants business help, but he's actually a big Sunrise Bay fan and wants Moira to star in a commercial. Moira thinks this could be her big break and she wants Johnny's help, but Johnny helps a bit too much and gets kicked off set. When Moira chokes, it's forcing Johnny to return and pump her up, and she's ready to fucking nail it. Meanwhile, David thinks he's suffering from a heart attack or pulmonary embolism, but after Stevie brings him to the local veterinarian, because there are no hospitals in Schitt's Creek, he's diagnosed with a panic attack. Since it's his turn to take a selfish, he ropes Alexis into going to a yoga class with him, where he promptly falls asleep on Jocelyn's back. Meanwhile, Alexis continues to struggle with her feelings for Mutt, especially when they get caught in the rain and she sees his abs for days. Matters are made worse when they're paired up in yoga class and she sees that badonk. And we finish the episode with Moira's commercial. So shouts out to Herb Ertlinger and his crab bull line. Stuart, what'd this you think?
This episode is wild. When I first watched it, I was thinking, okay, I don't think we can pack in as much as we have been in the kind of short time frame that these episodes air on. But in 20 minutes, we get through a ton of different scenes. Admittedly, kind of just from three main real plot points that really are happening throughout. But they get in a hell of a lot of stuff in there. And Moira's advert, I mean, bless her soul. I love her to pieces so much. But to end with Herb Erflinger, Bert Heffinger, Herblinger, like
Bing Live Hanger.
Ban Sing Bingo Ling Fuck.
Yeah. Bingo Ling Fucker was my personal favorite.
Incredible.
It's so good. It's so good. Yeah. Melissa, tell us a bit about why you chose this episode in particular. Because I feel like this feels like a breakout episode for Moira specifically.
Yeah, so I think this is the first episode that you are going to watch that is really iconic. Like, if you were to say to random people who watch Schitt's Creek who might not remember, be like, you know, the one with the wine commercial. And I think I do have a slight confession to make, though. When I was signing up for an episode, I thought this was a different episode. There is a very specific... So this is a great episode, and I'm very excited to come
talk
about
it. I think I know which one you thought you're signing up for.
Yeah, so you'll get to it. You'll understand why it's iconic, and why I'm very excited to have you all talk about that episode in particular. It is like a very meaningful episode, and I'm very excited for that. But I thought that conversation happened in this episode because of the wine of it all, and it doesn't. But that's okay. But yeah, this is also an amazing episode, and I think that, yeah, this commercial is truly Moira coming to her own. It's a lot of, I'm not really of the opinion that Schitt's Creek is one of those shows where like season one is meh and then like everything else is amazing. Like, I don't think this is a Parks and Rec type of show. I think Schitt's Creek is pretty amazing from jump. And sure, maybe it takes a couple episodes to get to know who these characters are, but it's been, I don't know, I think it's bangers all the way through, to be honest.
Yeah, all bangers. Nothing but bangers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we talked about the kind of pacing of everything. We said that kind of the first episode was really kind of like here's an introduction to the characters. And then in episode two, they really get going with just, here's a scenario and here's how they're going to start dealing with it. And it's interesting to like kind of see that they are not having that lull that other shows do, where you have to like spend maybe half a season, even some shows where people tell you, oh, it gets good in the tail end of season two. No, we're like already in the thick of it, and we're only in episode six, which is really encouraging.
Yeah and it just keeps getting better. This show is good until its finale. Like, there is no no drop, in my opinion.
It doesn't,
and
slow down.
That's a pretty common opinion.
Yeah It's definitely something that I think should be touted, like the show should be talked about in that way, where it's like there is no attrition. There is nothing that happens that you're like, I'm gonna stop watching because it's lost, the quality has disintegrated. It just does not happen on this show. I will say I was a little surprised that I feel like in the beginning of this series, Johnny to me is like a character I wasn't, I guess I just, I was, I'm a little surprised that like of how much we're, he's kind of doing things. We're kind of like, no, Johnny, like, stop, don't do that. You know, especially this episode, Melissa, it's like, he is Moira's biggest fan. He's always her cheerleader. And yet it's like when he gets a little bit too controlling, it is such a bad side to Johnny.
Yeah, because we saw him do it with David as well, with the job and calling him at work all the time. And I, to me, first of all, like the line, if you want me in your corner, I'm there. Like Johnny and Moira are such couple goals in so many ways. But yeah, this is not his best look when he's just, I think he's trying to help and he doesn't have a lot going on in his own life right now. So he's doing a lot of meddling in the lives of his family members. And Johnny will, you know, eventually start to come into some of his own stuff and get his own pursuits going on. But I think that it is a bit of a character arc for him where at the beginning he's a bit lost. He's used to, I think, being the source of kind of financial success for this family and the provider of so many things, although Moira had her acting as well. So she wasn't, you know, she was contributing in that department too. But he's, you know, the business guy. He's used to making mm-hmm. deals and connecting with people. And he's not doing any of that right now. And I think that it's hard for him. And it's really interesting to see, again, these characters are so beloved because they're not one note caricatures of anything. Like, not even Moira, right? Like, we will see dimensions of every single one of these characters. And it's why people love the show.
Completely agree on that, especially with the whole like idea that they're not one note characters. I mean, like, I was worried about that when we first started, that like from experiencing the first time, I thought, okay, well, we're gonna get Alexis, who's gonna be like a spoiled kind of like valley girl. We're gonna get David, who's the kind of like the doted upon kind of son who is gonna get everything and as such is gonna be pampered, and Moira is gonna be, well, Moira, and that's all we're gonna get, is the kind of like jokey accent. But we've seen, I've like with Moira in the I think it was the last episode, the episode before, where she knows the kids incredibly well, to the point where like she knows them much better than Johnny, and yet she doesn't seem to kind of exhibit really kind of like overtly typical kind of like motherly energy that you would get in typical writing like this, which kind of just shows like a great bit of depth to them, but also just sets us up for some really good humor with the way in which they kind of just play with those expectations a little bit.
Yeah, and I do have to commend the show in terms of the pacing of these episodes, right? Like, within 20 minutes, we get the rise and fall of, like, Johnny a few different times. And, like, and not only that, but we get such a lovely moment between Moira and Johnny where she's like, I can't do it. Like, I've lost it. I messed up. I choked. Mm-hmm. And, like, this is the end for me. And he's like, absolutely not. Like, you've got this. And then he pumps her up so much that drunkenly she's just like, I'm gonna nail it. Like, she's just, she's ready to go. And it's incredible. I think, like, one of the best parts about this show, you know, I would always classify it as like a chicken soup sort of show or like a warm hug sort of show, is the relationships feel real and they feel genuine, and like you feel the love between characters so much on this show. It's like people really aren't cutting each other down as much as a lot of sitcoms I think do. So yeah, I love the Moira and Johnny storyline this episode, especially because it's, you know, Johnny expects that he's going to be the one getting a job, and when it turns out to be Moira, of course it's going to like rub him the wrong way. He's going to get overly involved. But he comes back to her side and he helps her out when she needs him, culminating in this final commercial with Moira, which is like to end the episode, just like absolutely incredible. Let's shift gears a little bit and let's talk about David. Gosh, such relatable behavior from David. He thinks he's having a heart attack. He does what we all do in these situations and Googles his symptoms, which, Melissa, I know you're a doctor and I know you're not that kind of doctor, but I still, you know, this is a bad idea to Google symptoms. You know, like WebMD is not a doctor.
Yeah, that is true. But it is also one of those things of, it is sometimes helpful to be like, okay, is this something that I should get checked out before? Because like, he's having a panic attack, right? Like, that is a good thing to go to a doctor about and like get help with. You don't have to just like have panic attacks. And yeah, I mean, I did it too. I was like having some like very mild pain in my pinky. And I went to my physio and I was like, I think my ulnar nerve is pinched and I'm going to need surgery. And no, I just needed like a few months of physio. It was fine. A different like work desk setup. But we all do this. But I think that, you know, it's good to know what the possibilities are and get help with it. So I think that that's okay. But yes, maybe assuming that it is the worst case scenario right off the bat is not the way to go. And, you know, if you're having a pulmonary embolism, you probably have a little bit more going on than just, you know, short of breath or whatever he's dealing with here. Can we talk about Ted as well?
Yes. So Stuart, I need to get your impressions on the vet that we meet this episode. I don't know if he has a name at this point, but Mr. Vet, who we meet when there's no doctor around. And so Stevie says, well, we have a vet. Let me take you to him. And he asks, have you been around other, you know, dogs' feces recently?
Weird question, right? Like, yeah. I was like listening to that and just being like, why did Stevie snort at that? Is it just the mention of
people, or is there something further to that? Because he's asking because he's a vet, which is normally what he would ask like his normal patients who are, you know, on four legs.
Right. Okay. That makes a bit more sense then. I was like, is it just a poo-poo joke? Like, it's just so ridiculous.
But I mean, no, this show I mean, will like, make them.
I mean, of course. Yeah. I mean, look at the title. But the fact that he is already like, they like within one sentence, the first thing he says back to David after like kind of the initial kind of like, yeah, okay, let's have a look at you and stuff like that, because I don't think you'll make it through the night kind of thing. It's like already in the same kind of realm of Stevie with the whole, I'm going to give you sass back and stuff. So initially I was like, I like this person. I hope they stick around.
Yeah. So my question for Stuart, do you recognize this actor?
No. Should I have? Okay.
Did you watch?
Oh my God, am I being really bad?
It's a Drag Race thing. So Dustin Milligan, first of all, beloved Canadian from the Northwest Territories. I love this man so much. He is just like, he's constantly raising awareness for a lot of like Northern Indigenous organizations and stuff. He does a lot of really great kind of charity work and is just, again, a fiercely proud Canadian, which we always love. And he was on Secret Celebrity Drag Race, on the best episode of Secret Celebrity Drag Race, because some of those were kind of very hit and miss. But there was one episode that he was on that I would highly recommend checking out if you haven't, because he was great on it. It was very fun.
Yeah, mine, despite the fact that I would classify myself as a Drag Race super fan, that's one series that I haven't really seen, is the Super Celebrity ones. Because why? But then also, actually, with that in mind, yeah, maybe I'll check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were two okay episodes, or there was one good episode, one okay episode, and two stinker episodes. So I can point you in the right direction. But yeah, I just as a general note about this cast, like, so much of it is like Canadian comedy royalty. I don't know if you guys have talked about the fact that Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara were on SCTV, which was like a very long running Canadian television sketch show.
SCTV, you say? Schitt's Creek TV?
I don't think that's what it stood for, but yeah. It's a little bit before my time. It ran like end of 70s, early 80s, but it's like how they became household names in Canada comedy. And so it's why, like, if you ever watch interviews of the cast, they're like, I got to be here with Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hara. And like, this is mad. Because for Canadian actors and particularly Canadian comedy actors, these are our, like, I'm trying to think of great examples, but, you know, basically think of the pinnacle of comedy wherever you're at, and it's these two, right? So anyway, this cast is just so wonderful in terms of bringing together Canadian talent, and Dustin Milligan joining in on this episode, I was very excited about.
Yeah. Yeah, I like this. It's very interesting. We are gonna see more of Ted the vet. This isn't the only episode he'll appear in, but I was surprised. Like, I didn't recall this being his introduction, was David going and, you know, getting his pulmonary embolism checked out. But it turns out it's just a panic attack, which David and Alexis don't even think are real. They think that it's what publicists say when people are like having a breakdown, which is so funny to me as like pseudo celebrities that they are. But poor David, I really felt for him as someone who like recently has suffered a lot with panic attacks. Like, they're no joke. And the physical manifestation of those symptoms can feel so more than, I don't want to say just a panic attack, but they can feel like you're having a heart attack. You're like, you're dying. Like, it can feel mm-hmm. like that. So I felt for David. And I love when he says to Alexis, like, it's my turn to have a selfish and we're going to yoga because it's going to help me relax. And Stuart, especially when he tells Jocelyn that he's just not vibing with the aesthetic of the town.
I love it because when he's like there and he's like, okay, well, like I'm going to embrace this and kind of let the feelings out and things. That's of course the first surface level thought that comes out, which is not the real deep thing that's actually bothering him. It's just one of the mild little things that's annoying. But in true David style, it says it as if it's an absolute kind of like non-comment, as if everyone is going to be like, oh, okay, yeah, you're just not vibing with it and stuff like that. Because it's just a backhanded, not even a compliment. It's just being backhanded.
Yeah, I love that David makes the comment about how he can't find kale in Schitt's Creek, because I remember when I moved to Vancouver, one of the first things I said to people was like, I've never heard people talk about kale and yoga so much in my entire life since when I moved to the city. So this feels like sort of the opposite of that with both the kale and the yoga. Although this couple's yoga is something straight out of Too Hot to Handle. Like, I don't understand what's going on here.
It's a lot. And we don't even hear, from what I'm understanding, based on the fact that it looks like it's taking place like in Mutt's barn, it's like Alexis and Mutt were hanging out somehow. Maybe Alexis went to Cafe Tropical and like Twyla invited her to couples yoga and she was like, I'm not going to go. Now David wants to go. So they both end up going. But yeah, it's very, like, Stuart, this feels like very tropey to me, like this sort of storyline where it's like, oh, Alexis has a crush on Mutt. And of course, she's put in a situation where she has to physically be very close to him and have his ass in her face, you know, like, and of course, it's his I don't even know if they have a title, but like the girl he's sleeping with is also the instructor for the class. Like, it's it feels very sitcom-y, the storyline.
Completely. And I think it kind of leans into that trope quite well. I mean, beforehand, when they're doing the community service and the sudden downpour kind of just hits, that's just the most TV thing ever, isn't it?
Oh, like, my gosh, rain. It's raining. Oh, everyone looks sexy in the rain.
Let me get out of these wet clothes.
Can I say the way that Mutt opens his shirt like that is so unnatural. Like, no one does that when they're coming in from the rain. They're not just like ripping their shirt open and letting their abs just like hit you in the face, you know?
I mean, especially to like open it and lean back to like show them off like the Come best on, way possible. Mutt. I was like, who are you? She's behind the screen changing. Who are you doing this for? You know there's a camera here, Mutt. You're
he
showing
knows what
off.
He's doing. Yeah. Yeah. Can I ask? I mean, Stuart, I want to know, how is the Mutt and Alexis thing working for you? We're 6 episodes in now. We're about halfway through this season. How is the Alexis and Mutt stuff hitting? Do you like it? Do you dislike it?
I kind of like it because I like the fact that Alexis has like a little thing that is kind of weakening her almost. Like, she's got this like strong wall up of just like, no, you're interfering with like kind of my fantasy kind of thing. And she's just going to go about her business no matter what everyone else is doing. Like, we've seen it in the mess. We've seen it in the fact that she's ignoring the call, like in the earlier in the episode and things like that. But then she is just having that wall slowly picked apart because she has a crush on one of the people here in Schitt's Creek. And that doesn't fit in with her fantasy at all. Even though it really does, because he's a boho hipster like guy who does yoga and
he composts.
He's everything that really deep down that she really wants. But do I want to see that happen? No, because I love Twyla and I don't want Twyla to get hurt.
Yeah, this is very fair, Melissa, that like Twyla feels kind of like the epitome of a townie, you know, where she's just like so sweet, so naive. She's just like this local waitress who's so kind. And of course, no one wants to see her get hurt.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I know you all talked about this. The fact that she is also a Levy, she's David's sister, essentially, right? Like, is always a very funny aspect to the show. But yeah, I will say the Alexis and Mutt storyline is probably my least favorite, like, season one storyline. I don't tend to enjoy a lot of Alexis's relationship drama. It tends to just be a bit of like, girl, stop making the same mistakes over and over again. Like, when are we going to grow up and become a bit less selfish? There's other stuff that Alexis goes through in this series that I really love, and her sort of growing into herself as we go. But for now, she is kind of definitely the bottom of the tier ranking in terms of characters I'm rooting for at this point. And I think just Mutt is just so like, we know nothing really about his personality. We just know that he's hot and into composting and doing Twilight. And it's like, yeah, and has a beard. So I don't know.
That's
I'm
enough
just
for some people.
It is. And yeah, I don't know. It's just, I'm kind of looking forward to getting past the Mutt of it all. But for now, okay, fine.
Yeah. Yeah. I've tried not to put my thumb on the scale too much because I don't want to influence, like, not that I could, but influence Stuart's opinions on like where anything goes or like how I feel about things. But I would agree with you, Melissa, that like through six episodes, I feel like we obviously know the Roses very, very well. But we also do know some of the side characters well too, like Stevie is a good example. And Mutt does not feel three-dimensional. Like, he feels rather flat, like a hot piece of abs. Like, that's what he is at this point. And so it's like, it's a cute, funny, sitcom-y bit is what it feels like to me. Like, it doesn't feel as real and genuine as a lot of the other kind of relationships. I'm not even talking like romantic relationships. Like, David and Alexis, you can feel their history. It's my turn to have a selfish, you know? Like, close the blinds. I haven't slept in a day and a half. Like, it feels like a real brother-sister relationship. And Mutt just doesn't, even though he's very connected to the town, right? Like, his parents are his dad is the mayor. He's dating Twyla. Mm-hmm. You'd think because he's so integrated that like he would feel like more of a real character, but he doesn't. And so to me, this is like the weak spot of season one. And one of the main reasons why I think season one is the weakest season of all the seasons of Schitt's Creek is because the Mutt and Alexis thing, we're six episodes in and it feels like it should have more like oomph to it at this point. You know, like if Alexis is really interested in Mutt, we should also be interested in Mutt and learning more about him. And I'm just kind of not. Like, he's hot. Sure. A lot of people are hot. it's just he's kind of boring. I don't know.
It's a fair point because this is the thing, is we've got a perfect opportunity to tell more of Mutt's story as well, in the fact that we have the two of them isolated doing community service together. And yet, really, we don't get into any of that. It's always him asking about her or her kind of reacting to something and then it kind of deviating away because one of them leaves or there's a rainfall or something like that. That's a perfect opportunity where they could really kind of like delve into that, which maybe is a bit of a kind of like missed shot. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm also just not a fan of like the kind of negging of it all. Like, it feels like Mutt knows that Alexis is into him and is sort of half stringing her along, but half like, I don't know, like it's one of those things where I'm like, okay, if you're with Twyla and unavailable, fine. If you're like in an open thing and could be into Alexis, great. If you're not into Alexis, then like, don't, I don't know. Yeah. Just the kind of like stringing and the like, does Mutt even like Alexis? He seems kind of annoyed by her most of the time. I'm just not into it.
Yeah, see, that's something I was wondering, is whether or not he actually is aware of it even. Because I think that maybe any kind of affection that she's showing or kind of any interest, I think he's already dismissive because of how kind of generally blasé in life she is about things. So I don't even think that if she was to like show any interest beyond obviously kind of like that first night, I don't think that he'd be like, oh, it's just her, like, she's trying to get like likes on a social media thing or to get revenge on someone for like sending the picture. Or it's going to be something that I don't think he's going to necessarily trust.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, I agree. Like, if he's interested, he should say something if he's available. And if not, I do think like he'd have to be kind of a complete moron to not realize that like she's at least somewhat interested in him. Mm-hmm. But speaking of Alexis, can we talk about the fact that now she's done, I don't know how many days of community service and is still rocking heels while she's doing it. Like, that's intense. Never would I ever. I mean, I don't wear heels on my best days. Certainly not going to be rocking them when I'm trying to pick up garbage and roadkill.
Yeah, it's I'm not a heel person.
Completely,
either,
so admirable, I think. And her reasoning is ridiculous. Well, I think...
Asinine wearing is more heels, like what I was thinking.
Asinine's probably a better word, actually, yeah. But the like her whole reasoning for it as a dedication to Naomi Campbell was, I thought, one of the funniest jokes of this whole episode. Because of, like... We cast our minds back as to, like, Naomi Campbell when she was, like, sentenced to community service. She did indeed wear Dolce & Gabbana Couture to do this. It's insane.
Yeah, if you're watching the YouTube video, I have pulled up the gown that Naomi Campbell wore doing community service. It is a full-on gown with open-toe shoe heel situation happening. This looks terribly uncomfortable. There's, like, a metal corset. How's she going to bend over?
I don't think she was probably going to be that effective at community service. Everyone is. Admittedly, this is the last of the 5 days. The previous outfits were well-designed and things beforehand, but there was nothing to the ball gown level and open-toed heels.
Absolutely ridiculous.
But, like, kind of iconic. But then you also do have to remember that she was giving community service for throwing a phone at a maid who didn't know where her favorite jeans were one day.
Yikes.
A bit awkward.
Yikes. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else about any of these storylines that we didn't hit on that we want to talk about before we move into some of the feedback we got?
Are y'all fans of fruit wine? Should we talk about that?
It seems... I mean, listen, I would try it if there were bugs in it, and I'm not even someone who's like afraid of bugs, but like I don't want to be eating bugs. Like I wouldn't find it lucky if there's one.
I don't think the bugs are like a requirement for it to be fruit wine.
I guess I mean, it makes me think of Stardew Valley for obvious reasons, but like, so we're just making wine out of like strawberries. Sure, I'd try it. I think I've had strawberry wine. So I would try it. Yeah, why not?
Why mess with a classic? Grapes all the way. Like, oh, it's, I mean, I love red wine so much. And I can't drink it as much as I used to. Thanks, health. Love it. But the, why mess with it? It's so good as it is. Why interfere with it with inferior fruits? Grapes all the way.
Oh, man. So there's this winery in BC and kind of the interior where like a lot of the wine comes from in our province, and it was like owned by like a friend of his family, and so we used to go there most summers, and they had a ton of fruit wine. So their raspberry wine, pouring some of that on like vanilla ice cream was amazing.
Okay,
and yes. I had to like stop myself from drinking it like juice. Like, it is so good. And they would have they would have like pumpkin wine. They would have blueberry wine. They'd have strawberries, rhubarb. They had like a bunch of really amazing wines. And I just got to say, they were really, really good.
I just think like Herb hasn't really figured out the right like selection, I think, because he's offering musk melon goodness to his oak Chardonnay. No, thank you. Dazzling peach crab bowl. Like, it's just like the options don't seem great. Like, give me strawberry, give me raspberry, give me the classics.
Yeah, so I assume it's oaked Chardonnay, like Chardonnay in, right? Because you can have either, like...
Listen, I don't know enough about wine to be able to comment on that.
So it's Stuart, help me out here, but I know that there's like oaked or un-oaked wine, right? Like, and
I think it's to do with like the barrels, because I think if they're stored in oak barrels, like oak has a really overwhelming flavor. I remember back in the day of Gary Vaynerchuk's wine reviews, he'd refer to the oak monster and he'd like shout about it because oak would just take over everything.
This is like when Michael Scott says it has like an oaky afterbirth. That's what he's talking about.
Possibly, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. So I love like that an your oaky... only reference for wine is The Office.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. So an oaky character to wine is not specific to fruit wine. But yeah, maybe he's not choosing the best of fruit if it's like crab apple and whatever the first one you said, muskmelon.
Yeah, muskmelon and crab. Like, crab apple is not... you just don't usually... Crab apple's like a nice tree to look at. You're not usually eating the crab apples a whole ton. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
Yeah.
This is a random selection here. I don't know. Not for me.
You've got to have peach for the peachification. Otherwise, if you don't have the peachification, what are you doing?
It's so funny. It's so stupid. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, the fruit wine. All right, let's get
other thing. Yes, I wanted to mention just before we move on is Jocelyn and the whole yoga part of it, because we kind of got onto like David and the whole kind of like him finally kind of admitting it, but Jocelyn, bless her, like absolutely excusing away Roland, who normally turns up to yoga, which is quite a surprise, but had a bad burrito, so is MIA, which was an image I didn't need, but yeah. Thanks, Jocelyn. But her solution to David's problems, just fuck a load.
Which, hey, we said this last episode. We're like, Roland and Jocelyn are into some weird stuff, and I feel like this mm-hmm. confirms it, that it's like, oh, you're just not having enough sex, David. Like, Roland must be, like, fantastic in bed or something. Or just into the same kinky shit that she is, I guess.
Could be. We need to keep an eye on those figurines.
I did just love her willingness to, like, sort of, like, lay there as David falls asleep on top of her. And she's just sort of willing to put... Yeah, I was like, she speaks so sweet.
She's too polite to not... Yeah. She's such a Canadian. She's too polite.
It might be the Canadian polite. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, sorry. You seem to have fallen asleep on me. All right, let's get into some feedback. Todd sent us a message saying Johnny deserves the disgruntled pelican this time around for his comment on Moira's outfit alone. I would totally agree, especially your wife is already wearing that outfit. The only words you should be saying are you look beautiful, or like mm-hmm. if there was like a thread or a stain, you can bring it up, but like you do not say, oh, was that the outfit we landed on? No, absolutely not, Johnny.
No. Especially when he's helped pick it, like, dude, pay more attention. Like, we've mentioned this before with Johnny, like his kind of like attention to things that he doesn't care about is really lacking. But like, especially when she's clearly vulnerable, like, read the room, man, read the room.
Yeah, not great at all. Will made the same joke. My husband made the same joke Stuart did. What type of lens are you using? Is this a ring light situation? Are we booming this podcast? So ridiculous. And you could tell the director is so pissed off at Johnny because, like, all the questions he's asking are probably super outdated. I don't work on, you know, commercial sets, but I have to imagine a lot of what he was asking is pretty outdated.
Just chucking in every buzzword that he knows.
Yeah, it sort of seemed like the... when he's talking about like the boom mic, where it's like, I don't know, this is an outdoor commercial, so I would assume they've got some sort of, you know, light and mic set up, but mm-hmm. I think it's probably taken care of, Johnny. You probably don't have to worry about that. But again, he's looking for a way to be involved because he doesn't have much going on right now.
Yeah, he offers to direct the commercial, which of course they politely declined. Melissa, when was the last time you took a selfish?
Oh, gosh, that's probably something to unpack in therapy. It's probably been a long time.
Great answer.
Yeah. Yeah. I would consider myself probably a more selfish person, or like at the very least more decisive, which I feel like would lend itself to being selfish. You know what I mean? Like, it's like if I'm the one deciding what we're going to be doing, I'm going to pick something I like. I'm not going to pick something I don't like. So I probably take a selfish fairly often. Stuart, what about you?
Fair play. I mean, I take selfishes all day, every day, because I don't like doing what other people do. I'm just going to like decide what I want to do. And if people don't jump along and join, go for it. But yeah, I think pretty much I can't really nail down the specific one. I just I'm going to say I'm selfish all the time, which is really bad.
No, but I think sometimes selfish is looked at quite negatively. However, you have to take care of yourself, because if you're not like taking care of yourself, you can't be expected to take care of anybody else. It's very like RuPaul, right? Like you have to be able to put you have to put yourself first so that you can be there to help others. And so I think like while the word selfish does have like quite a negative connotation, it's not always a bad thing to be self-interested.
Fair play. Yeah.
I say this as a Leo.
It's going to count as my therapy for the week, right?
Well, obviously. Brenna commented, the vet is cute. I hope he sticks around. Well, Brenna, I have good news for you. We're going to see Ted again. And yeah, he is quite cute. Love Ted. Stuart, do we need to formally apologize to Brenna for last week's podcast? Is that what we need to do? Because she did not like the figurine chat.
I don't think we liked the figurine chat. We were the ones giving it.
We had to speculate. It had to be speculated about that, like, where are those figurines going in terms of the sexual exploits of the shits?
I mean, I blame you for bringing up the figurines, but fair. Once they were brought up, I think we were just articulating what everyone was thinking. And exactly. If you weren't thinking it, congratulations, you're a saint. Much better people than we are.
Any thoughts, Melissa, on Jocelyn and Roland's figurines and what they might be doing with them?
Absolutely none. No.
Great. moving on, let's give out some points here. Melissa, let's start with you. Who do you think was simply the best this episode?
I think you have to give it to Moira. Like, I don't know who else did enough in like any one particular direction to get it. I think that her kind of getting a job, being able to follow through on that job despite some self-doubt, and then just bringing the biggest laughs of this episode, I think that it's got to be her.
Stuart, what about you?
I mean, narrowing over a couple as I usually tend to do. I was initially considering Jocelyn, because to let someone fall asleep on you mid-yoga because you know it's good for them is lovely to do, but I have to agree with Melissa. Moira gets it this week for going out, getting a job, and putting up with Johnny's BS.
Yeah, 3 for 3. Moira gets my point too. You can't just make crabapple like a 16-syllable word and not get my simply the best point. She made me laugh so hard. But I also think there's a lot of there's a lot to admire about Moira in this episode as well, because like we've all suffered with like self-doubt and imposter syndrome mm-hmm. at times. And she does like pick herself back up, dust herself off, and do the commercial. And that's like super admirable, especially for someone who hasn't acted in a minute and is kind of carrying the weight of like, oh my gosh, this is my opportunity. Like she says, like, this commercial in someone's hands could be fantastic. You know, and you can see that she does care. She cares about her job. She's not going in and just, you know, going off the cuff. She practices. She's practicing in the mirror. She's like practicing the lines. She really does care. And I felt like that showed a different side to Moira this episode. So she is simply the best. 3 for 3. Good job, Moira. Yeah. On the other hand, disgruntled pelican. I think I know where we're all probably going to go, but Stuart, where are you landing with your disgruntled pelican point?
Johnny didn't even question it.
Yeah, super fair. He's just, he's, I mean, I'll jump on the bandwagon. It's not a great look for Johnny. I think a lot of it is coming from like not a necessarily bad place, Melissa, where like he thinks the job is going to be for him. So obviously there's a little bit of envy there. There's a little bit of like, he's usually the breadwinner in the household. And I understand where he's coming from, but it's also just not a great look.
So I'm going to refuse to give it to Johnny because okay. I, first of all, I don't think he holds on to a lot of, like, he's not resentful that the job is for Moira. He seems happy for her pretty quickly. He just wants to be involved, right? Like, he's just excited for her and wants to be a part of it. So I don't read any, like, negative reaction in that or, like, resentment or anything like that. And then the other side of it is just, like, how supportive of her he is, and the fact that when she is feeling so low, he's the one that tells her how amazing she is and that she can do it and helps her kind of pull herself back. As much as he is obviously problematic in this episode in some ways, I just can't give it to him. I'm going to give it to Mutt just because I'm over that whole storyline.
Totally fair. Yes. I get it. So 2 minus points for Johnny and 1 for Mutt. Let's talk Mutt's about first. Mutt's first. I mean, yeah, we'll see if he gets more this season. Who knows? We don't necessarily have a Moira wig, but we do have like quite an interesting hairstyle that she's rocking when she goes to her Bertlinger's. This looks like her hair, but she's kind of, do you know what it reminds me of? And gosh, this could be a totally American thing that neither one of you get. But are either of you aware of John and Kate Plus 8, the TLC phenomenon of like probably the early aughts?
Sort of, not really, but yeah. I think I know where you're going with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is John and Kate Plus 8. It was a couple and they started out with twins, and through like IVF or something like that, they ended up having six, I think they were, they had six sextuplets or whatever, and they had a TLC show all about them. And they became like massive, massive, like, you know, pseudo celebrities, I guess you would say, as a result. Well, Kate of the John and Kate Plus Eight rocked a hairstyle that could only really be described as like the back of it kind of looked like a porcupine. And it reminds me of this with Moira's hair in this episode, in this moment.
I was getting Russell Brand towards like the late noughties with the whole back combing kind of vibe where it was just an absolute mess of things. Can't say I know the thing in like Kate Plus Eight kind of like reference, but also like pulling out for Octo Mum. What happened to Octo Mum talking about loads of kids? Like,
yeah. Okay, terrible. I have, yeah. Go ahead, Melissa.
To me, this hairstyle is like the definition of business in the front, party in the back, but that party has gone to like a wild thing. It's like that party's at 2 a.m. No one's looking good anymore. People have lost shoes. Everyone's like kind of drunkenly stumbling home. That's the party that's happening in the back here. I don't totally understand how it's even happening, like how it's so up at the back.
A lot of hairspray, I have just, to imagine.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm mostly confused by just like the physics of it because, yeah.
It gives like sex hair vibes. Like I was a bottom and I didn't check a mirror before I left the house. Like, and it was a real rough time or something, you know?
I also like the smoothness in the front. Like how does, yeah, I don't know.
It's a weird look. I did find a picture of the back of Kate from John and Kate Plus Eight's hair.
So this is
if you're watching the YouTube video, this is kind of the vibe. It's very like spiky in the back, straightened with a straight iron in the front. It's a very odd look that I don't know if it ever got popular, to be honest. But
can I speak to the manager?
It is very Karen. It is very Karen-esque. Yeah, not Moira's best look, but certainly an interesting one, I would say.
Worthy of wig watch, I say, even though it may not be a wig.
Yes, definitely worthy of wig watch. With that, let's get into our tier ranking here. We have our normal tier ranking of at the top, hot shit, then full bouquet, love that journey for me, ew David, and shit out of luck. So we have Wine and Roses that we have to add on to here. We currently only have one episode, our last episode, The Cabin, in full bouquet. Three episodes in Love That Journey for me, and the pilot is in You, David. Melissa, any thoughts like right out the gate of where you think this episode belongs?
I think probably given the combo of the commercial storyline, the panic attack storyline, and the yoga and like Mutt Alexis of it all, it has to end up kind of somewhere in the middle because the first two are amazing and the last one is kind of meh. So yeah, I would put it probably in the middle just because I know how much better the show can be. So one of the like love that journey for me, you David, honestly, yeah, one of those two.
Stuart, what do you think?
I was thinking similar. I was thinking Love That Journey for me, definitely. I think it should probably go in there. I'm wondering, like, I think it's slightly better than The Drip. So I'm thinking maybe just ahead of that.
I kind of agree. I was thinking Love That Journey for me. I was just struggling as to like where within there it falls. And I think it made me laugh more than like the funniest moment in The Drip. Like the high highs of this episode are higher than The Drip, even if we're kind of like giving it a bit of a knock for maybe the Mutt and Alexis stuff, which isn't super compelling. So I'm thinking maybe we want to kind of sandwich it between Bad Parents being ahead of it and The Drip being below it. How does that sound?
Can I comment on the ranking of this all? So in the very first episode of this podcast, you all discussed that this tier system was superior to a ranking system because you don't remember what goes before what and how to go after and all of this. And then your tier system immediately turned into, well, it's between this episode and this episode. And so we're going to slot it in towards the left-hand side of this tier versus the right. Like, you are ranking these episodes.
Yeah.
So you sort of like defied yourself. And the whole point of the tier system, it's fine, it's your pod, do whatever you
but
like.
Rating but rating would be harder bananas. But rating would be harder because I would give everything like, oh, but this one gets a four, this one everyone gets a four, if it's out of four,
you can Yeah, you can still rank them in order, but it was like, oh yeah, we're not going to do that. It's like,
well, okay. To be fair, we're only going to do them per season, so that thankfully we're not going to have to remember season one when we're covering season five. Yeah, you know, like it's going to be like that,
but I still think remembering all of season one is going to be a challenge.
There's no excusing it. She sees through our bullshit.
We thought we were so smart.
Just listening along to the pod, and I got to the end of I think it was the third episode where you started talking about before after, and I was like, wait, I thought they said they weren't gonna do this. I'm so confused.
Yeah, you know,
anyway,
it's fine,
do whatever you like.
We're I'm the very worst. Happy for you both.
Well, I think I like where it do we like this. I think I like where it is now in Love That Journey for me. It's yeah. mid.
It was good, and I think like you said, like the high highs of this episode made me laugh so much more than I think most other episodes. Like that commercial at the end was just one of the best things that I think we've seen thus far in terms of like singular gags that work entirely on their own. So more than happy for it to go where it's gone.
Absolutely. Well, that's our episode. Stuart, do you want to hear what the title of next week's episode is?
I do indeed.
Turkey shoot.
Are we going hunting?
Turkey shoot. We'll see. I don't know. Again,
if I'm denied Moira in a camouflage outfit, I'm going to riot.
Okay, good
and
to
all
know.
I have to say, I don't remember if this is a Thanksgiving episode, but Thanksgiving is in October in Canada. So just, you know, we're just reminding everybody about that. We too have Thanksgiving. It's just a month earlier.
There you go. So we'll remember that for next week. We're not going to be alone either. We're going to have a special guest on for that episode as well. So that's really exciting. Again, don't forget to subscribe, follow along, rate us 5 stars if you don't mind. That way we can kind of get up in the charts and get more people listening. Reach out to us, podcast@talkinshit. Follow us on social media @talkinshit. Again, find us on YouTube because it's so much nicer when you can like get visuals with some of the stuff we're talking about. I know that's an audio medium, but like YouTube is great. You can also just put it on the background, this little picture-in-picture thing. It's great. But thank you, Melissa, for coming on, educating us on some Canadian stuff that we're so bad about. What else do you have going on? Where can people find you?
Yeah, so people can find me over on Whirlwind Podcast. Search Whirlwind Podcast in your podcatcher of choice and check us out there. We're covering a lot of different television right now. So I'm actually continuing with Inside the TARDIS. It's our Doctor Who coverage with Adam and Kevin. We are covering Veronica Mars over there with Adam and I, and that has been so fun. We've just started, so we're kind of just a few episodes in at this point and really enjoying it. They're doing Shameless. They're talking... Todd and Tommy are talking all things animation, and that is such a fun podcast to cover. The One Indescribable podcast team is talking about Girls 5 Eva, so there's a variety of things. Some of it might be your thing, so feel free to check it out. And then Whirlwind Pods on all social media, or I'm Melissa W28 on X and Melissa Woodward 28 on other social media. You can follow me there, although I'm really bad at promoting myself, so you should just follow the pod directly.
You can find me on Shit 90 Shows Taught Me. We just wrapped up season one of Buffy and season one of Felicity. Incredible finales for both of them. We're in the, apparently season two of Buffy is like the best thing since sliced bread. So really excited to dive into that. And Melissa joined us over there to talk about The Mummy recently. That's going to be out in just a couple of days. So go check that out. Stuart, anything you want to plug? Anything people should be directing their attention to?
Nothing really to plug, just that if you want to come say hi to me, Stuart Drinks Tea on all the socials.
There you go. All right, well, thank you everyone for listening, and you know what, this week, everyone, you take your selfish and have a good one. Bye.